Session number 1361, Mr. K. Lodge, Reel 6.
Mr. K. Lodge, Reel 6. Can you go on from where you were, Mr. Lodge, as you were advancing into France, in effect?
Yeah, well, from the positions what we held just in front of Bayeux, on June the 13th, we moved out. And we just walking up the road to see how far we could get up towards Chile in sections either side of the road, just walking casual. And then we got so far along the road, and then we sort of turned off the main road onto another like, sort of by road, and it went up a little bit of a bank, and we got on top of the bank. And the Germans, by then, I had seen them then. They must have let them just walk right in. We were just walking away casually. All of a sudden, the spandaws opened up. What a nice. And that was probably the fastest I've ever hit the deck. And these spandaws was raking the roads. And we were just lying there, just taking it. We had no cover. On either side of the road was wide open. And up on the right, there was a bit of a building. Now, where the fire was coming from, we didn't know. But we were forward sectioning, and we were getting it. There was another one on that side of the road. Anyway, all I could hear was bullets thumping in the ground and in the muck flying. It was up flying in my face. I could hear bullets going at the ground, buzzing. And I said, God, what am I going down now? And the lads behind were coming through the road, they could get back behind the road. And they were setting up the brain going the other way. Somebody was shouting, fire into that barn or something. Anyway, eventually, they got them all, except me.
Everyone in your section?
Everyone in my section. I was the only one that wasn't hit. They weren't all dead. The first four was, I lost my mate, Eddie Fennick. They got the officer, Lieutenant Bell, got the corporal, they got Eddie, they got Bennett, then they got the other lad in his two legs, and there was myself and another lad lying beside me, and hit him through the wrist. And I was just lying there. I says, God, I'll never get out of this. I've gone now. I honestly thought I'd gone.
Does fear grip you?
I was because the Germans, by then, opened up with the mortars. The mortars was coming down now. But most of the mortars was going behind me. The lads behind were catching them, and this went on for a while, and I just lay there and I was just thinking, like, you know, and then it went quiet. Apparently it pulled out, and I thought, like, they must think I'm dead. So, and I said, I wonder if I could crawl back. If I got back the road, I'd be able to stand up and I could get out there. And I started crawl back over because I had a shovel. I used to carry shovels, you know, for digging in. And I said, well, I'll get this shovel out. I pulled the shovel out and then I started crawl back over. I said, they're about to see me doing this. You know, I couldn't say that. I had no idea where they were. And the equipment come over the top of my head. We're trying to crawl back over. And then I thought, well, how far we're off the slope of the road. Like. And then I got back there and I, right, this is it, our chance. And I jumped up and I ran. Back down the bank and I was away. Running down this bank, the lads behind it caught it. There was trees blowing across the road. And there was men lying underneath the trees. And I had to scramble over these trees. These men were underneath were dead. And I go over these trees and I got out and I was away. And I said, wait, where's everybody gone? And I got back on the main road again. And I saw an officer. And he says, where have you come from? I says, well, I've been up there. He says, is there anybody else up there? I says, I think they're all dead. But there was one or two more come down, the lads had been on the other side of the road. Some of them got away. Later on, they decided they could come out. And then, oh, that loads of wounded. Everybody was being cared for. And then, the amazing thing was, they decided to regroup and have an attack at the Germans this time. Attack the Germans. Oh, I don't fancy this at all. Anyway, they got a few tanks up to support them. And these tanks went ahead like, but we attacked from the other side this time. But as soon as the tanks got on the top, they caught it as well. They had no chance, and they just gave it up. Then we came back, and we walked back, and we camped in this field. The following day, by this is June the 14th, following day, so they decided then, right, we'll attack Verrières, because get through Verrières and get onto the main road which connected the road where we just come from. We'll try and break them there. The 6th Battalion would attack Verrières and the 9th Battalion would attack Langres without aircraft support, Typhoons, and artillery, but the Typhoons strapped the wrong place. So we all lined up for this attack.
You all lined up, formed up. How did you form up?
Sort of in platoons, sections, platoons, spaced out.
Backwards or in line?
In line. But you always have like a reserve company. On this particular time, A Company was going to be reserve company. So I was having a bashing the previous day.
So you would watch the others?
But it didn't work out that way. We were called straight in. But B Company then went in first. They attacked across this cornfield. Now I've been back there before and you see this cornfield. There was space that was wide open. And this cornfield was half grown and half cut. And as I say, B Company went in first.
So, they're advancing across the cornfield in a line, First World War style.
Yes, all right.
There's no print like running, dropping once and covering somebody who went through you, then hopping forward like that. It was just
company attack, straight forward, right across these fields. Now the Germans was dug in right at the bottom, and they literally sprayed those fields with spandau fire. A crossfire. They were very well organised. And then we were called in action straight away on the left hand side of B Company. We had to tack down this road.
And you were in a similar line situation, were you?
Oh, yes, I. The idea is you've got to run and get down there as quick as you can.
Had you fixed bayonets?
Oh, yes. We tore the fixed bayonets before we went.
And the signal, what was it, whistles or what?
No, just the sergeants. fix your bandits, lads, and then right over, move out. Officer leading the way. By Major Galloway, he was wounded. But dear, he was wounded in the arm.
And so you're going forward across a field or down the road towards the Germans.
Yeah.
Do you run straight away, or what's the procedure?
Well, you run, then you're down, because the firing is terrific. I wonder whether, if you've heard bullets coming towards you, they crack like whips. They make a hell of a noise. They're like cracking in the air, whip, banging it out of the air. And it's sort of like running and crawling and get on there the best way you can.
So you're running and the fire's coming in and you're dropping.
Yeah.
Do you get up automatically and run, or someone screaming for you to get up and run, or what happens?
Well, you're sort of down there and you're looking and these bullets are going over your head and you're thinking, and somebody else, somebody, the sergeant's here. How are you? We'll move on, you know, keep going. You sort of, he gets up where I'll follow you, and you sort of follow on style.
Yeah. Did you see or hear any men who wouldn't get up, dropped and wouldn't move on?
No.
Or did
no.
you discover afterwards this had happened?
No, there were no other men. The ones I wish they were moving on, like, yeah. Actually, I'll tell you how I actually got down. There was a Bren one carrier turned up, like the mortar platoon, and I actually ran down behind the Bren gun carrier, right down at the Benny Harris. Yeah.
So you're going down, and men are falling, and as you say, you're dropping and you're picking up. What was the rest of the thing? What happened? What's your recall of what happened after that?
Well, what I recall, it was horrific, and I was very much surprised how we ever got down there. But by the time we had a tank support and all, and they were getting knocked out. There was a lot of tanks actually burning in the cornfield, and we sort of got down there, and strange enough, when you get German positions, when you get the positions, by the time you get there, they've already pulled out. I've never actually caught them in the positions. They've always pulled out. And they sort of like pulled back in the sort of counterattack. They always counterattack. And we got down into this little village, many years, and there was actually got through some of the forward lads that actually got into the village, B Company, and getting them onto the main road. And then I think they were forced back through sniper fire. They couldn't hold up there because there was a lot of wooded areas. It was wooded. And we fell back into the village, and we sort of stopped in the village. And then the battle just sort of petered out.
So what's the drill then? You've got onto the objective, the battle peters out, what are you doing then?
Oh, you just...
Because you're expecting a counterattack.
Oh, well, you just, you know, you just sort of consolidate your position and... You dig in, you dig in trenches, and then if you expect a counterattack, nine times out of ten it comes, but there's always a chance it doesn't come, and it we would just sort of sit there and talk and who's missing. And
after all the excitement and the adrenaline, the fear, and you're into a position where it stopped. What do you feel like then? What at that point?
Well, you feel that you're still alive. Well, I'm still here. And there was a lot lying in that field that had been killed, and we were the lucky ones, you know. We thought, well, this is, you know, I'm still alive. It's always the other chap that gets killed, you know. It's never you.
And you say you were talking about with your those that survived with you about who'd got hidden.
You talk about the battle and the machine gun as you bah, what that span off fire, terrific, you know. Yeah, and it's you, oh, you know who caught it, you know. And then maybe you have something to eat, brew up or something.
Is there any feelings of intense tiredness that comes over you when everything shuts down so quickly, physically?
Well, I don't know. In situations like these, there's a lot on your mind. You don't feel it. The pain, or you're thinking about what's going to happen next. Then as the time gets on, you sort of to relax a bit, and next thing you know, you can be fast asleep. And once you get to sleep, it takes some waking up. You stand on the feet to waken them up.
Yeah. Coming across the field into the attack, men would be going down. What kind of noise are you hearing? Screams, yells, shouts? What's?
You can hear men shouting. You can hear that. Somebody shouting, oh, stretcher bearers. You can hear that. Oh, it's always somebody shouting, stretcher bearers. Stretcher bearers here.
The wounded who would be lying out in the field when you got the objective, what kind of noise are they making? What shouting are they making?
Oh, I never hear anybody like later on, you mean, after the battle. Oh, I never heard anybody mourning and going, they died of being picked up, or they died of the wounds, which a lot did, just lay and bled to death.
You obviously lost a lot of men. Mm-hmm. Does there come a point at the end of it all, when it's over and you're relaxing or whatever, that you actually look at it and say, that was a bloody awful battle, or criticise the officers for putting you in that way, or criticise somebody for putting you in there?
Yeah, you used to look back at it and say, boy, that was... I remember June the 13th and June the 14th as terrible days. You know, having to do this sort of thing. But as I say, you just got on with the job, like, you know. But it's not a thing you want to do again. Like, once, I think... Anybody that's been in battle once, he's a fool if he ever goes back. Yeah.
Did you find going through consecutive actions that your fear increased? The fear that you were getting closer to a situation where you might get hit, thinking that you wouldn't be going to be lucky all of the time?
Well, to me, having been frightened on numerous occasions, it never got any worse. See, it couldn't get any worse. You were already frightened, and you knew what was coming. You were getting more experience, you know, and you knew what was coming. And you just thought, well, I'm getting a bit more experience now. I'm going to look after myself now.
Did this mean that you took fewer risks? Or you were that bit slower to move? You got that bit deeper down?
Well, as these individual battles goes on, you learn a lot. And you don't try to take fewer risks. You know when to move and when not to move. You know, you can sort of pick your own way. But in situations, it doesn't always work. I always think battles... It's situations, how you get involved. Because you never knew what was behind, in Normandy, you never knew what was behind the next edge. You never knew what was behind the bend. And you could get a battle could flare up anytime. It was just situations you used to get yourself into. I've been through, I mean, such as myself, during the attack, we were attacking across this field. And I got over the hedge onto this like a dirt track road. And I'm looking down the road and I sort of be cautious here, you know, because I seen it before all of a sudden. And I was getting down this road right from Bennett, and there was a German come through the hedge. But I'd actually gone past him, because he was just on my left. And he come through the hedge. And when I spun round, I hit him with Bennett. And that was the closest I've ever been to being anybody. And I don't know whether he dropped his rifle or he had a rifle or what, but there was nothing in his hands at the time because his hands just blew up. And I hit him with a bayonet, and he actually thought I was going to bayonet him. And he screamed. And then, he could have blown me away. Because he must have seen me. And I was raging. And how I didn't pull that trigger, I do not know, because my hands was on the trigger, you know. And he put my hands up in the air. And then he put his hands down and he got some photographs out of his wife and his children and all this. But I just thought, how close can you get, eh? Right, to me, I don't know whether what his intentions was, whether he was telling to get me or give himself up, I don't know. But I got a friend of me like that there when I see them. And then the others have come, the others, my mate was behind us by then, like, you know. And then I just carried on and got in the.
What part does anger play in a battle situation, when you're actually charging at people off, getting close to them? Are you angry and worked up? Are you?
No, you're not angry. No, you're more frightened than anger. You know, you're attacking these Germans. And you don't feel any, I'm going to carve them up. And you don't feel that. You're mostly thinking about to yourself. That's what you think about, survival. You think about, well, I could be dead any minute, you know.
What keeps you going when you would think, thinking of survival, going into attack, the idea would be to get down behind something and stay there. What keeps you going into it all the time, although you're so frightened?
Right, because it's just something you have to do. You have to do it.
Your pals are around you. Does that influence you? You don't want to let...
It does. In a way, but as I was saying, you're taught to do it, and you do it. That's just about it, really. You don't want to do it. You're frightened to do it. But something inside of you pushes you on. That's what it is. But it only needs somebody to say, right, oh lads, turn back and get away. You don't have to be told twice.
What influence has your officer got? Because he's leading you. Does he influence your actions? Particularly if you know him well.
Yeah, but strangely enough, the sooner you're more or less on your own. Obviously, you've got a platoon commander and you've got a company commander, but they're not with you all the time. They just disappear. Everybody starts to spread out, and very often you find yourself on your own.
When you attacked at Verrières, you'd have a new section because you'd lost your own.
But the company, the just take the company was reduced. You see, but I said we'll reserve company that idea. But we still had to go straight in with B. And we just sort of joined in with the other sections. You know, they just be all organised again, and they just joined up and into the section. Now, after the attack on Ferreira's, what was left of E and what was left of B made one company, because we lost our company command and me and Major Galloway, he went back wounded. And then E and B made up one company under Major Atkinson. He was in charge of us then.
Major Galloway, you said, was a good man. In what ways? What did you admire him for?
He was a good soldier. And he seemed to look after the young. He seemed to look after the younger lads. He was always interested in the younger soldier. You know, he's used to go up, how are you getting on? How are you going on? And he used to, right before D-Day, he used to more or less tell you all the lads to we've got a lot of young lads, but you know, you can give them a few tips, like they'll sort of look out for you. But that didn't happen. Once you get in there, it's every man for himself. But they told us to keep your head down but Major Galloway, he was a fine officer. Broke my heart when he was killed. I'll give it. He was like a sort of a rough and tumble officer. He was believing physical fitness and that type of thing. Oh, took a pride in he could march 140 paces, he could do 160 maybe, you know. And a good example of this man was when we were playing football. He would stand on the touchline and he would shout, "Never mind the ball, get the man." Bags of blood. I want to say bags of blood. Now imagine shouting that today. That was Major Galloway, that was. And then he used to have a run doing blindfold boxing. Put about half a dozen men in the ring and blindfold you and start thumping one another. You couldn't say anything, you could get killed. Get a one up the throat or back of the neck. But I got a hit up with a nose. Once my nose was absolutely teeming. Took a long time before it stopped as well. I'd lie on the side of the ring for quite a while. But he was a grand officer, Major Galloway.